Welcome to the Building Your Dream Career podcast with 3Skills co-founders, Toby, Josh, Marianne, and Anissa.
Welcome to How I Build My Career. I am your host, Anissa Stoli, and today I have with me Jonathan Zifkin. He's a tech leader and, as of recently, the Director of Strategic Customer Success at Airtable. Welcome, Jonathan.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So you have worked in customer success for the last 10 to 15 years. Has this been a career you've always wanted to pursue?
I mean, the honest answer to that is no. I didn't know what customer success was, really. I had started my career in technology consulting at Deloitte and used it as a stepping stone to really, you know, learn about big process and data and collaboration with teams and just sort of big implementations of really big tech systems really interested me and really wanted to work with some smart people and learn a lot. And that was my foray into the tech startup world. I think naturally I had skills that were aligned with sales. So I started my career really in the tech space in sales and business development and continued to sort of hone that craft. And over the course of time, I think it had dawned on me that it's not something that I love doing. There's elements of it that I love doing, but I think a career in sales and waking up every morning and chasing and hunting, I didn't have that mindset like some other sales folks out there who are really driven by that. And so there was an opportunity at one of the original companies I was with to build out this function of customer success. And at that time, it was brand new. But what I had come to realize is it was so much more enriching to work with customers, to get value out of your platform, to see them succeed. And I really gravitated towards that. So that was sort of the making of how I got into customer success.
That's a really cool path that you took. I actually have heard a few people who are now in customer success say that, you know, they considered sales and ultimately picked customer success. What do you think are the skills or even the personality traits that you think made you an ideal candidate for the a career in customer success?
Yeah, I think there's a couple sides to it. I think the hard skill around the technical side of things. I think you really need to have a desire to understand and play with technology and be technologically, I want to call it advanced, you know, really understand platforms, be very curious. How does this platform work? How does our software work? I think when you equip yourself with all that technical knowledge and know-how on a platform, it equips you to be really great at customer success, right? Because now you have a really good command of the platform. And so when customers have numerous amount of business challenges that they're trying to address, you're able to pivot on the spot and understand how can our platform address your business challenges and ultimately affect a positive business outcome. So I think number one is understanding platforms and being really curious and having, you know, the technical aptitude to be able to understand it all. And then the second one is empathy and understanding customers and knowing on the other side of that line or computer screen or whoever on the video, I guess nowadays, you know, what are our customers thinking, right? I always tell folks that these are really just humans helping humans. That's what customer success in the end it really is about. You have a human on one side who's in their professional environment who needs help. They're working with software to make their life easier and make their workflows easier. And on the other side of things, you're a customer success manager or working in that field, and you're trying to help them. Right. And so you're connecting humans to humans. So empathy and them understanding what pain are you having and truly caring about it really makes a big difference.
That makes sense. My husband is actually in customer success, so I can see that. Yes. And he Yeah, I can see how he spends a lot of time in understanding the product, which is, yeah, it's number one.
Yeah.
You cannot be good in it if you're not curious, like you said. Now, a lot of our listeners are either building a career or even pivoting careers. Maybe they're finding themselves in a job that's unfulfilling or one that is draining. And customer success often comes up. What would you say is a good path into customer success from wherever they might be? Is there a clear path into it? Or, yeah, what would you say?
I'm not so sure that there's a very clear path. It's not as clear as, let's say, being a software engineer, right? Where you study it, you understand it, and then you go into software engineering, you put it into practice. Customer success is sort of a mishmash of skills and ideas and thoughts. It encompasses a certain profile of individual. How to get there? I think the most logical path is through sales. And of course, we can break this down and talk about all the different kinds of sales roles. And there's sort of evergreen and new sales. And then there's growth sales, you know, expanding on existing customers. And so I think growth accounts, going into sales and sort of nurturing and growing existing customers is a great way to really flex your muscle around selling, right? And hone that skill and work on it and become good at it. Build that connection with the customer. Again, the empathy piece, know you're solving business challenges and solving them. And then, you know, I think that's a nice logical path because it's a win-win. Either you really succeed at the growth side. But again, if you're not waking up motivated every day by working on the sell, then you can be motivated every day by working on the value, right? And sort of extracting value with your customers. You're both growing, you're just growing in two different ways. And so I think sales is a really natural path into customer success. I think a lot of people end up migrating. And by the way, vice versa. People ask, like, how do I get into sales? And my customer success is also a nice path into sales, mm-hmm. right? Because you realize you're really good at sales, you like it, and you're driven by that. So,
yeah. And what would you say is the main differentiator then between sales and customer success for anyone listening and is like, isn't customer success customer service? I hear that a lot, actually, but we know that's not the same thing. But what would you say is the difference between all these?
Well, I think customer success, first of all, I think it's fairly new, even though the term has been around for, 10, 15 years now, really. How it fits into the organization is still very new. And I think a lot of companies are figuring that out. The main differentiator is, and I think I read this, I can't remember where I read this specifically, but you don't have, especially in a SaaS business, we're in a SaaS business, but you don't have recurring revenue unless you have customer success. Customers that buy, even if they sign a three-year deal, it's not recurring until they get value out of your platform in the first year and realize that what they're buying is providing exceptional value for them. And it's really attaining all their outcomes that they've desired. And that they're able to scale with you and you're able to scale with them. Once they've come to that realization, customer success is responsible for extracting all of that in their first year, right? And long-term, it has to be durable growth. But really working with customers in the life cycle early on as a new customer, they're really focused on, hey, we purchased this platform, for a specific outcome. And we need to prove that outcome. Without proving that outcome, there is no growth. So customer success is really about how do we ensure that value is coming to life? And there's a million different ways to do that, but how do we make sure it's coming to life? And that economic buyer says, I bought it for X and we attained X. And now we're able to grow and figure out all the different use cases. Customer service, of course, is really sort of the table stakes of running a software company. How do you just service your customers, support them with their everyday questions, right? Answering everyday questions is different. And then, of course, selling is selling. That's right. A whole other podcast.
Yeah, that's very true. It almost, in terms of order of the touch points that a client might have within a tech company with all these teams is sales, customer success, customer service in a way. It's the way I see it in my mind as well. Now you work at Airtable, and I have heard incredible things at Airtable, mainly again through my husband, who's obsessed with the tool and the platform. He uses it for everything. For anyone listening, again, can you explain a little bit about what Airtable is?
Yeah, Airtable, it's interesting. Airtable is, before I even get into it, Airtable is one of those platforms that is so advanced and is able to solve an incredible amount of use cases across an enterprise. And so we've really targeted the pitch of the company towards a specific organization like marketing or like product operations to be able to address that. And once we sort of pitch and talk to them about how we solve all their challenges, it becomes, it's less of a direct pitch. We don't have a one-liner, but if I were to make it concise, you know, Airtable, it's a highly customizable, no-code app platform that enables teams to design their own applications, run their processes and workflows. What's unique about it, though, is that we empower the people that know the business the best to design flexible, scalable applications that work exactly the way that their teams need. You know, and I think that's what's really unique is I've spent my life in software and all the tools that I have used. I find myself changing my process around the way that that point solution works. Mm-hmm. And I think, and then you start to stitch together this system with that system. And so Airtable solves that problem is I want to work. I know the business better than anybody. I want to build what's best for our business. Mm-hmm. And we give you that ability to do that through a low code platform, meaning all non-IT workers are able to build their own custom applications based on the way the business runs. And that's empowering and that's really valuable for our customers.
Right. I would say Airtable is slowly becoming one of the top companies for applicants right now. I hear it a lot and I'm hearing a lot of people saying, I want to work at Airtable. And I mean, as a director, you're probably seeing a lot of hiring happening. And I'm curious, what is something that a candidate can do to stand out in an application process at Airtable? I hope that's not secret information, but if you've seen or something that you even did in order to stand out for a tech company that's growing so fast.
I think Airtable aside or me aside, I think it's so important to be authentically you in the interview. Right. And I think a lot of people are trying to talk about accomplishments or professional resume and really start to sort of bend the accomplishments and the milestones within that. We're very, and like many other organizations of size, you know, you have standards and we have ways to really dig deep into, you know, accomplishments and understanding the way people think, right? But it's not just about the resume. I think the resume is table stakes in that you have the ability to demonstrate that you've done this sort of thing before, right? Whatever role it is. But we really care about specific attributes, right? That make, we call ourselves air tablets. What makes a specific air tablet really successful? And we have specific attributes that are very consistent across the organization. And, you know, I've been there now for a little over a month or coming into a month now. So I'm brand new. And I like to think that I demonstrated those attributes. I think I learned later that I did, which was exciting to hear. But, you know, we look for that. And I think these attributes really help align with a specific profile. And that really helps us drive who the right folks are for this organization. You know, I think saying those attributes publicly, I think we look for them. We try to extract them without having to say it publicly. So probably not best for me to divulge what all those attributes are for all future candidates. I think, again, back to being authentically you, we don't want people speaking about how they embody specific attributes without actually, you know, demonstrating it authentically.
Yeah, and you've worked for other tech companies that I'm familiar with, Uberflip. I think it is located in Toronto as well.
It is, yeah.
Yeah, that's where you are. The attributes side of things. So like, yes, you don't have to say them, although that was going to be my next question. Feel free if you change your mind to share some of them. But what is a good way? Of course, you want the candidates to be authentic and to come fully as themselves in the on their resume, in the interview process. But what are some ways to even identify attributes that any company might find as valuable, in your opinion? Is it what? Yeah,
I think there's one that I can talk about, and I think it's okay. One, you know, it's sort of like a package of skills that I've had to hone over the years and work on. I think naturally I have it in the way that I think, and that's and a family member of mine who's also in tech, really, I always thought about it differently, and he positioned it in a different way. And that is, when you're working in a tech company at this scale, and even if you're working in a tech startup, by the way, it doesn't really matter. They're all the same in that there's an ambiguity factor in your work, right? And he called it the ambiguity quotient, which I love. And that is, do you have the ability to work in an environment and be adaptable and take on all of this change that's rapidly happening in front of your eyes? How do you deal with that? And I think it's pretty clear that there are some folks, and my wife is one of them, by the way, who needs to work in a very structured environment that has really rigid processes, and there's a way of following a script. And then there's work environments like Airtable, like tech startups that I've worked at prior, where, you know, you put in a strategy, put in, you know, execute on some tactics, and they're all different in 90 days. And it turns over every 30 days and 60 days and 90 days, and everything's changing all the time. And, you know, you don't have leaders every second of your career, and you have to make decisions with imperfect information. And so you're constantly in this evolving environment. So I think the ambiguity factor and quotient is a really important one, which is, how adaptable are you in these work environments, right? Have you demonstrated that you're able to take on all of this change, right? How do you deal with it? What's the impact it had on you? What's the impact it had on your team? How do you manage that? How do you prevent it as you scale? So I think that's a big one. And that's a package of skills. Ambiguity itself isn't a skill, but right. How to be adaptable within that, I think, is a numerous amount of skills, that you need to work on.
Right. Adaptability is an interesting skill, because with, you know, so many companies, especially tech companies, being remote now, and of course the conversation is coming back again, going back into the office, hybrid, fully working right. from home. First of all, I'm curious, what is your opinion around that, the remote versus in office? Do you have a preference for yourself and then for your team?
I've been largely remote for 7 years now. Prior to the pandemic, I've been traveling and working all over the place. I've been on the road for 7 years, and so I've had to work remotely on planes, at concerts, and like, that's because I was in the live event space. So I'm personally used to it, and I've adapted to it, and I like it. Having said that, you know, I was just in San Francisco, finally connecting with some new colleagues, and being able to sit in a room with a whiteboard and connecting on an emotional level with someone, and just jamming out in a boardroom where you can just talk freely. And, you know, I find that Zoom calls they're very limiting. You have a set time, you have that wonderful red leave button on the bottom right that everyone is excited to click at the end of the meeting. So for me, my belief is, I think we're in a hybrid world. I think, number one, if you want to attract talent and grow your company and scale, I think you need to be open to that. I like the idea of a flexible environment where the expectation is, come in for a couple of days a week, collaborate, build your meetings around that, and then, you know, 2 or 3 days at home. I think that hybrid model, I think, is probably best.
I agree.
I think mandating a full return to an office, I think, is going to be
hard.
Yeah, I think it's going to be hard.
Yeah, I think so too. I couldn't imagine going back full time into an office, especially because I literally moved to Greece in the process. So having to move back to Canada in order to work in an office, that'll be a little hard. But now a lot of our listeners pivoting careers currently are going from office work into the tech world, which sometimes can mean remote. How we were talking about adaptability. What are some changes that they'll have to make in the way that they communicate, that they showcase the skills? Because of course, when you're in an office, certain skills and strengths can come across much easier. They can be seen by a manager in right. much easier. Are there things that you like for your team members to do to see that they're progressing or that they are doing their job right? I guess what I'm trying to ask is, what are some things that team members can do to stand mm-hmm. out to their managers as they grow in a company or in a role?
Yeah, I think, first of all, I think it's all under the umbrella of communication. We have Slack, you have email, you have form teams, you have all these forms of communication. I think the fear with remote workers is, I haven't heard from them in 6 hours. Like, are they actually working or are they not working? Now that's a whole other problem around honesty and trust within your team. And that's another issue. But generally speaking, I think over communicating is going to be really critical here, right? Giving more updates than you probably needed to, setting expectations with your manager on how you want to communicate while you're remote, I think is really important. Aligning with them, saying, how do you want to hear about updates? How often do you want to hear them? Do you want to hear them every day? Do you want to hear them every week? We should absolutely be able to provide an update every day. That's probably overkill, but you should have an update every day, even if it's a small update. And just keep continuing to align the expectation of here's what I'm working on. Here's a focus for me. So you're never thinking, are they working on the right thing? So I think that's it all falls under the umbrella of that. And also, like, I'm a big fan of like micro Zoom calls. I just made up that term. But like the ad hoc, you know what, I can sit here and Slack with you or email you and ask you a question, and then I'm going to respond. Like, let's get on for 60 seconds, right? The same way, the same behavior I'd have if I was in an office. Hey, have a question. Can you just clarify something? That opens up you think about efficiency, right? You're clarifying probably an hour's worth of Slack messages back and forth. So I'm a big fan of these intermittent ad hoc Zoom meetings to clarify, to make sure you're on the right track and that you're focusing on the right thing. Because that's ultimately what it comes down to, is are you working on the right thing that's been prioritized? And then also, how are you progressing?
That is really good advice. I think something that I've noticed a lot, even growing in my own career and getting out of my comfort zone, is the communication side of things. Will my manager think I am asking for too much if I'm constantly, updating them? Or should I be fully independent and just do my job, and then the results will speak for themselves? I think you are right and that's something I've learned in the over communication, giving an update every day. Something else that we've also we talk a lot about at Three Skills is just the power of keeping track of the things that you accomplish within a job, and what we call a brag doc. It's essentially a document that you use to brag about your work.
Right.
That is a trail of all the amazing things that you've done, because it's true. Ultimately, managers just want to know that you're doing what you're supposed to do. And in a remote setting, like you said, being going MIA for 6 hours can sometimes raise the red flag, no matter how much you trust your team, right? So I hear that. You said you worked in the live event.
It was Intellitix was a company I worked at that deployed technology in the live event sector. So that was a unique experience.
That's cool. So what was that? What technology was that? What did you do there?
Yeah. So have you been to, you lived in Canada prior, right?
Yes.
So think about, did you go to any music festivals when you were here?
Yeah, specifically in Montreal.
So like, that technology, RFID technology,
okay,
where you go to a live event and that replaces your ticket. So it becomes the platform that is a more intelligent form of ticketing. So now you have a wristband that's locked on your wrist. It's specifically assigned to you. And you're able to navigate the event. There's a whole security system in place with this technology. It's also your form of payment when you're there. And so you create an event bank account, and you draw down like a debit card from that wristband. So the event then has full visibility into who John Zifkin is, when he comes in, where he goes, what he's spending. And it gives them a tremendous amount of data to better understand their event, but it also helps with increased spend, as the experience for the customer and the patron is that much better. There's lower lines because people aren't fumbling with cards and cash. It's tap, tap, off you go. So every, you know, there was a wonderful video that someone took. It was a terrible video quality wise, but we filmed a bartender at one of the earlier events, and he sold like 28 beers in like 2.5 minutes.
Wow.
You know, just because he's like, two beers, tap, tap,
right,
walk away, two beers. So a lot of benefit to that technology. And so, you know, I was head of global customer success, and we were operating in 19 different countries and set up a joint venture in Brazil. So I was bouncing between North America, South America, Europe for about 6 years almost.
Wow.
Until the pandemic. Yeah.
Right. I was going to ask. So the pandemic probably changed all that.
Changed but all that, of that.
That sounds like such an awesome experience though, getting to travel. And as a customer success, head of global customer success, what was your role? Like exactly.
Yeah, so specifically, the way that a typical engagement worked is we would sign a big live event, and that could be the Preakness Stakes horse race in the US, or it could be Coachella, or it could be, you know, over in your world, Tomorrowland in Belgium, which is huge. And once we engage with the customer, it's a little bit reversed. It's an interesting dynamic because you're not working with the customer 365 days a year per se. You are planning and building to get value out of this technology. So the same principles of customer success apply, but you're building and but it's high stakes because you have 3 days or 4 days to implement this technology. You can't afford a mistake, right? And if you can't afford downtime,
right?
The system has to be built and configured and designed almost 100% properly for you to get maximum effectiveness, because you're documenting and creating millions of transactions and hours. So all those teams that were customer success teams that were planning, and all of our on-site teams all rolled up into me under the customer experience. So I would manage all of that.
That sounds really awesome.
It was interesting. Yeah. I mean, you hit a ceiling on growth at one point, and obviously that coupled with the pandemic was a reason for me leaving. But no, it taught me a lot. I think it built a lot of skills that I think are really helping me today.
Yeah, I can imagine. Now I can think of, like, on the marketing side, I'm in marketing. One of the teams that I always work closely with, no matter what company it is sales. I wonder, on the customer success side, are there specific teams that you always, always, no matter what company it is, you're always in touch with?
Yeah, I think some audience listeners here might disagree, but I have a bias to customer success. So obviously, I'll say this. I truly believe that customer success is the greatest asset in the company, and that they're the nucleus of the organization. They're really the only group that effectively touches sales, touches marketing, touches product, touches engineering. Like, it touches all areas, support. So you touch all of them. I think sales is the logical one where it's heavily weighted because you have a customer experience flow that starts there, but product heavily relies on what are our customers doing, right? How do we translate all that market information, customer information in real time into our product teams? You know, how do we do account-based marketing? How do we market our huge customer base and speak to our customers today and let them know about all the wonderful things that we're doing? There's the marketing side, right? We're hearing from our customers, there's a lot of support tickets and bugs and, you know, like that affects engineering and how they fix things. How can we make sales better, right? Here's what our customers are doing. Here are the new and unique use cases, right? Here's what we're hearing. That equips them to be able to speak more intelligently about your customers, which in turn talks about our success and they sell more. So I think they're the greatest asset. And I think what they end up, they're also a really great source of an export within a company, meaning you have people in customer success, they build a customer or a profile for themselves and a brand. They now know how to sell and they enjoy that. They know about the product. And so there's a whole series of options for them on how they want to pivot in their careers. And so a lot of people in customer success also move around.
That was going to be my next question. So that's really cool. I wanted to ask one last thing before we close off this interview, which has been so informal in terms of the customer success world. And I think a lot of our listeners will find this really insightful. But for anyone who is listening right now, and again, is feeling really just unmotivated in their current role, we do talk a lot about career pivoting, but what are some things that someone like that, that you would tell someone like that to do before even considering quitting and moving on to something else?
I think the first thing that any of us need to do when we're thinking about that is documenting the things that are really important to you. You know, my brother said this to me and he forced me to do this, which really helped prior to Airtable actually. And that is, what do you want to do? Write these things down, create a one pager for yourself. And I never realized how helpful it was to really get a handle of what are the things that are important to me? What are my motivating factors? What are the things I need in my role? Who do I want to work for? Who do I want to work with? Right? How do I want to grow? What's my path? And so write down even the most tiny menial details, write them down. I don't want to travel. I do want to travel. I want to be in an office. I don't want to be in an office, right? Like I want to be on a big team. I want to be on a small team. Write all these things down so that you empty your brain into a document. And that really forms a template on the things that are really important to you. And without that, I think it's really hard to make decisions on what's next for you, right? And then once you have that, it really becomes clear, because when you're evaluating roles and someone says, hey, there's this role over at this company, are you interested? You're not motivated by the wrong reasons. Oh, it's a cool brand, but the role itself, you're just going to get yourself into a situation that you're in today. So put up that template and put it up against that opportunity. And does it match? And if it matches, great, go for it. I think that really helps. And also leverage your network. Talk to a lot of people and let them know what you're thinking and put, you know, put them on your radar, on their radar rather. Put you on their radar. I can't say that properly. Put yourself on their radar.
That makes a lot of sense.
You get the point. But I think a lot of people are very knee-jerk reactions on what they want to do, and they say, I don't want to do this anymore, and they get out and they hunt without actually having a real formal template of their life.
Right. Yeah, that's great advice. Thank you for sharing that. And thanks again for coming onto our podcast. Is there a way that anyone listening who wants to get in touch should get in touch with you? Is there a best way?
Yeah, I think LinkedIn is always great, and send me a note, right? I think LinkedIn is a great tool, assuming people put context around their messages, so I know how to best engage with them.
Yes, awesome. Thanks again, John. Oh, thanks again.
My pleasure. I'm happy to be here, and thanks for connecting.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Building Your Dream Career. If you got some value out of this, feel free to share it with someone that might need it, or you can leave a 5-star rating on the podcast. Visit the3skills.com for free resources to help you build your dream career. See you next time.